members, our support team, the agenda for today has got two items: consideration of the committee's draft report on the oversight visit to the Eastern Cape, which took place from the 2nd to the 6th of February. Discussion on the possible international study tour. Is that okay? Any other thing you think we should discuss today? Those two are fine. Are there any apologies? Honorable Low EFF. That's all. Yes, Honorable Fick.
Honorable McLaughlin is on his way. He will be in place.
Honorable McLaughlin is on the way. Oh, yes. Honorable Madlop is still on sick leave. Those are the apologies. Can we quickly dispense with the tour, because I know that the secretaries have been requesting that we finalize this matter so they can start working with the office of the House Chair to finalize. There is a proposal there for three countries to look at: Sweden, Germany and Chile. Has the members had an opportunity to go through those and see which one is the best? May I ask Pelelan to quickly take us through that?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Good morning, honourable members. As Chair has indicated, that members have had an opportunity to read the analysis. The analysis was circulated by Zandile last week on Friday, or on Thursday, I can't remember. So what would be important for today's discussion, without further ado, is to draw the attention of members to the recommendations that we are making from the study, from the research. The person has indicated that there were two countries that were identified, of which two countries have emerged to be the most preferable ones. In our recommendations, we are saying, based on the research that we've done, the study is evidence that from the study, Germany and Sweden are the two countries that have the most advanced, sophisticated and innovative budget systems, both in principles and in practice. It is no surprise that the two countries are highly rated by the OECD reports. As discussed above, the strength of these two countries emanate from the following factors. Rule number one: parliaments from both Germany and Sweden have overarching budget oversight powers. For instance, parliaments of both countries have unrestrained or unrestricted powers to actually amend the budget. You'll recall that this parliament has actually passed a law which is called Manages and Amendment Procedures and Regulations Act, which empowers parliament of South Africa to actually amend the budget, unlike before, where the case was not. So now, we need to actually go and see how are they actually going through that amendment process in their parliament. As it has been also evident in a number of studies that we've done across the world, right, there are very few parliaments that can actually be able to amend the budget. Most parliaments have not been able to reach that stage of amending the budget because it requires capacity, it requires social memory, it requires resources, it requires a whole lot of things for Parliament to be ready to amend the budget. That is why you'd find the executive being more dominant around the issue of budget process in many countries. Now, the second bullet says parliaments from both Germany and Sweden have vast experience in the budget process, which is what I've alluded to. Third bullet, parliaments of both Germany and Sweden have highly experienced and capacitated budget committees. The dedicated budget committee in both countries have innovative and sophisticated approach to budget oversight. We conduct budget oversight over the executive at this committee. We pass the budget bills. We also conduct in-year monitorings on expenditure to see if the expenditure of those departments is actually in line with what was projected in the beginning of the financial year. So we need to learn as to how have they strengthened all those aspects to make sure that they play a meaningful role. And also remember that the amendment process of the budget is done by various committees. Portfolio committees can propose amendment in their respective votes. And therefore, this committee should be able to understand what are the implications of those proposals, whether they should be carried forward or not. Because this committee might not propose amendment itself, but it mitigates, it plays that mitigating role around the amendment being proposed by other stakeholders. The fourth bulletin says, in practice, parliaments of both countries perform a meaningful role in this budget process, both in principle and practice. For instance, parliaments from both countries regularly make significant amendments to budget proposals by the executive. We are saying also child, on the other hand, children, on the other hand, lacks sufficient memory and capacity to perform effective oversight of the budget process. Furthermore, the role of Parliament in Chile is restricted by its constitution, especially in respect of budget amendment. And when they say it's restricted, what we picked up was that Chile cannot amend the budget across the board. It can only amend it horizontally, non-horizontally, downwards. It can only do the reduction of allocations. It cannot increase the allocation. It cannot propose any increase on allocations or horizontal amendment, which is your programs, where you can say agricultural programs should get more than social programs and stuff like that. So it only reduces. So there are some restrictions that render them powerless in a way, if you like it, compared to these other two budgets, these other two countries, where their powers are unrestricted. They can do decrease, they can do increase, they can do horizontal amendment. So they are really a final arbiter for this budget. And honourable members would remember that across the world, legislatures are not the same in terms of this practice. Some legislatures are still defined as rubber stamping legislatures, which means they don't have capacity. So when you're rubber stamping legislature, you don't have powers, you don't have this kind of reform that we have in South Africa, so you can't amend the budget. You only sign, you only approve the budget as well. Whereas in South Africa now, we've got a tool and instrument that says to us, before you approve it, you can actually, as Parliament, say, this is what we are proposing. So, with that reform, you then have to go and see how other people actually exercise that kind of reform. We are proposing these two countries, Chair, on the basis of that. They are very strong. They have got capacity, they've got instant memory, they've got experience, and they've been recommended, not by us, Chair, by the OECD report, you know, that does investigations across the board around the legislative powers. And also, with that in nature, the issue of logistics, what we picked up also is that when you look at the map, Germany and Sweden are quite closer to one another because they are both around the northern Atlantic Ocean. Even though Sweden is much closer to the Norwegian Sea, but they are both on the same North Atlantic Ocean. Whereas Chile is located far, you know, bottom, at the bottom of the southern Pacific Ocean. So in terms of logistics, then it will make, you know, our work much easier to fly from Sweden to Germany, or from Germany to Sweden, and it worked out very well. Thank you very much, Shekasin. I think that was...
Thank you very much. Honorable members, proposal is we visit Germany or Sweden. Sometimes it's here to look at the experiences. Honorable McLaughlin.
Thank you, Jay. Just a question, if I may, for clarity. Right at the foot of the page, page 17, it says, in the light of the above, it is recommended that the Standing Committee on Appropriations visits either Sweden or Germany as part of the planned study tour. If this is only part, what's the rest of the study tour?
Okay. Any other questions before they respond? I suspect that's the only study tour. Okay. Is there any other?
Yeah, thanks, sir. The main part of the study tour is for the committee to go and learn how does this parliament interface with the budget process as we do in South Africa, right? What are their practices? What reforms have they introduced in the past? You know, and how have they carried out those reforms in ensuring that Parliament gains the strength of actually being, you know, a Parliament that amends the budget. In our last bullet, we have actually indicated that they've made a regular significant amendment to the budget process, which is a great achievement for Parliament to actually do the amendment. It's simply saying that Parliament is really, really a final arbiter of the budget process. Because National Treasury proposes the budget and comes up with economic assumptions. Now, Parliament will have to, before it actually approves it, it must go through a vigorous process of ensuring that the budget is actually addressing, you know, what their constituencies are actually advocating for. And that's the bigger aspect of the budget, of the tour. Now, there are some elements as well that you might find interesting there, which is your budget office. We have budget office that has been recently, you know, established in South Africa. In their countries, they might not have necessarily budget office in the true sense of the word. They've got different mechanisms. In fact, in Sweden, they've got what they call rapporteurs, which they appoint to assist the budget process. Those that expect, those are guys that analyze all documents and actually brief the budget committee and advise the budget committee, they call them rapporteurs. In Germany, they've got also different mechanisms. But what is more interesting between these two countries is that in their very nature of style, they are not the same as well. The other one, which is the Sweden, is a unicameral, which means it has got only one house. But the irony is that the parliament has been stronger with that one house. It's still able to actually exert its power. Whereas the Germany has got two houses, the bicameral, like our flags, and it has got two committees from both houses that lays the budget oversight. Thank you very much.
Honorable Fick.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. If I missed it, I apologize, but can we just know who those three young ladies are? When you talk just now, that's the one. And then the second is regarding the tour. What's the duration of the tour? I'm asking that question because these countries are so close together, is it not possible to visit both countries and make that comparison?
Make more comments before they respond. Any other? No, for now. Okay. Okay, before that.
Yes, I wanted to make this comment that one of the things that I think we would like to study is what we call in South Africa the intergovernmental relations in terms of national government in those countries and the states that they have, the whole process of division of revenue and how they relate to one another. So it won't just be looking at the national government or national governments, but we'd like to see all of that as well, if possible. But I think that is In our case, that's part of the challenge that this committee has, and probably part of the challenge that the country has, generally speaking.
Maybe what we should do, depending on where we'll end, what we can do if we're going to Germany, if it's approved, both countries will then ask for more information before we leave. So members are able to read more so that when we get there, don't start from scratch being briefed, because you know you will be lucky to have 2 days in one country. So if you come well prepared, you are able to engage and we are able to ask what we want to see, what we want to engage on.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I also wanted to indicate exactly that, say, this brief was mainly prepared as a preliminary, just to give an overview to members as to what really can be recommended, and also to assist the process of application. Then once everything is approved, we then get into more details, into the nitty-gritties of what members can ask and all of that, what issues that members can raise. But broadly, this is the gist of the talk. And also, maybe if I can respond to Honorable Dr. Figgis' question, the duration of the tour normally is a week. And we are proposing that to push the envelope further, maybe from the House Chair's application, we apply for two countries, both countries, Sweden and Germany, right? Seeing that they are close. But your motivation will say they are not the same in terms of the system. You see, because you will have a concern to say, why do you want to go to both countries if then they've got lessons that you can, why do you go to one country? Then you say, no, the system is not the same. The other one is in the camera, the other one is by camera. And then you can hear from there, obviously, what he will say. But that will bring, will beef up your motivation towards that combination of two countries. That's one. The second question on IGFR that is raised by Honorable Tobaza, what you've identified with regard to Germany is that it's a federal state, unlike us, we are a unitary state. So it has got a central government with federal, you know, sub-national, sub-central governments that have got their own powers. The federal state have got provinces that have got their state on their own, they've got their own constitutions, they've got their own revenue base, and therefore it's not necessarily a sole responsibility of national government to actually raise revenues and distribute them across. You find, for instance, in Canada, we were once there in Canada, we found out that some provinces in Canada, mostly Gauteng provinces here, will be able to raise their own revenues in the federal state without relying on the national fiscals. There are, however, a compulsory mandate or functions that the national needs to finance, but unlike in our system where everything comes from the national fiscals to provinces and to locals. So they are able to raise their own funding in different states, especially those that are metro states, those that have got economic hubs and all of that. They are able to raise their own funding. So the issue of resources is not a question. It might be a question where there are disparities, we find other provinces are more rural than others, so they can't therefore raise revenues as equivalent to others. So then the central government will need to then intervene and pump more resources. But that's an interesting aspect. The Sweden, we haven't really identified whether it's a federal state or unitary state, we have not come into it. But all we can say is that it has been defined as a Sweden, a kingdom of Sweden. Yes, that's how they call it, the kingdom of Sweden.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, thank you very much.
Honorable members, is that fine? Okay, we can go to Sweden?
Mm.
Yeah. What the team was saying that it might be that the executive officers by approve one country. Although we'll try and apply to go to both, my sense is that if they say one, either of those will be fine. I don't think we should argue about this, because they seem to have similar, unless members want to say, if they say one, what is our preference? Maybe we can then give them that. If they say one, then let's go to Germany or Sweden. You want to say that, or you don't mind? Honorable Shopester.
Well, I would prefer that we try very hard.
Is your mic on?
Oh. Thank you, Chairperson. I would really prefer that we motivate very hard, because I think it would be very beneficial
for both
to go to both. But in the event that they don't approve, which is very unlikely if you write a good essay, well, let's see what other things can we learn except the division of revenue from these countries. What is it? Maybe a general legislation, making of legislation, things like that. What is it that is or more or less beneficial? As a gender activist, I would actually prefer to go to Sweden, because there are many women in that parliament. So maybe that can actually lift my spirits. Thank you.
Honorable Fink, you're coming. Okay, thank you very much. Let's go to both countries and see what we can learn. If we go to one, then we can look at other things that we may do there. Yes, Honorable Fink wanted us to introduce the newcomers. At the back is Yukai Mukorombindo from International Budget Partnership. It's an NGO. Am I correct? Yes, IBP, International Budget Partnership. The other two ladies are from PMG. PMG is the one that in the past there was one man who likes sitting at the corner. I don't know if he has gotten pension. he's still around. Yeah. Now, I think PMG is well known parliamentary monitoring group. They always attend our committee meetings and various other committees in Parliament. You are welcome.
Thank you
very much. The trip to the Eastern Cape. The trip to the Eastern Cape. Who's going to report? Is it you? Okay. Therefore, other members, you've got the draft. Okay. If we can, I would like us to finish the meeting before 12. If we can. I'm not saying we should rush too much, but if we can, let's do that.
Thanks, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, colleagues. Just before I start with the report itself, just want to make a note referring to, in one of the first meetings the committee had, Chairperson indicated that we'd like to see the committee focus on priority areas of the state. And then following that, we had hearings with various departments for appropriation bill and for MTPS. And the committee picked up that actually deliver of water services is a critical issue, and also the schools program of the state are two important issues that need to be followed up upon. And what emerged just recently when we adopted the division of revenue is that allocations that go to water service infrastructure for the MTEF increased by over 30%. So it is clearly an important state priority, and clearly it reflects on the proactivity of the committee that they are able to identify the issues that are actually emerging as quite important. And yesterday, Department of Water Affairs again, it emerged that the committee is very much interested in even inviting them for hearings as well. So it's clearly a priority area that the committee is interested in. I'll begin the report now. Okay, I'll just highlight few issues on page one, and then I'll stop, and then I'll allow the committee to okay.
Okay. Just before we get to that, I thought we should add energy, because our challenge for economic growth is on energy, and as this committee, we are worried about the money, economic growth.
He was just making a preamble. But next week when we meet, we'll be discussing the department that we want this year. I think he was just making a preamble of what motivated us to focus on water and sanitation. So your point is taken, Honorable Shoppers Toilet. So next week when we meet, we will then say yes, water, very important, but also energy and then whatever others we want to add. Okay.
Thanks, Chairperson. The committee went on oversight from the 2nd to the 6th of February 2015. Essentially, the oversight was to gauge progress on water services infrastructure, specifically for the regional bulk water infrastructure, that's the first paragraph, the municipal water infrastructure grant. And the committee went to see specific sites, the Mount Alice bulk water supply scheme, the Mhleleni storage development, and the Ntontela and Temukasi borehole developments. And the committee also wanted to assess progress with regards to the accelerated schools infrastructure delivery initiative, and the committee went to see four schools: Langeni Senior Primary School, Chief Boglin Senior Secondary School, Beki Sulu Senior Secondary School, and Twenisizwe Senior Primary School. The committee did have meetings on the 4th of February with the district municipalities, National Treasury, and SALGA, and Cooperative Governance as well, to discuss water services infrastructure delivery issues. And on the 4th of February, we did go to see the four schools, and on the 6th, we did have a meeting in Islana to discuss the CD programs progress. And then at the end of the page, they adjust the delegations and the names, and it goes on to page 2 as well. I can stop.
So far, so good. On the first page. All right, go to the next.
Okay, on page 2, most of it is still the names of the delegation, and then right at the bottom there is just to give the terms of reference for why we actually went on the visit, and just to highlight aspects of the constitution that speak to every citizen to have access to clean and sufficient drinkable water, and then it's also identified in the NDP as an important priority. And then I can go to page 3, and the the first two paragraphs at the top also speak to water services as a priority contained also in the MTSF. And then the paragraph just above the table, it just gives an indication. I'll just indicate what's contained there. For the two districts that the committee visited, OR Tambo and Alfredton, so their municipal water infrastructure budgets were 89 for Oar Tambo and 54 for Alfred Nzo in the 14-15 financial year. And then for RBIC, for Oar Tambo, they were allocated 24.7 million for 14-15 financial year, and the Alfred Nzo were allocated 143 million. And the table underneath this paragraph just gives an indication of the budgeted amounts for the specific five sites that the committee was interested in. And then the paragraph underneath the table, that it just seeks to highlight the importance of schools in infrastructure in terms of the national development plan, and also the views of the committee. For example, in the second paragraph there, the committee recognized the importance of ensuring that all learners have access to a quality learning and views the continued investment in schools infrastructure as critical. And then the last paragraph just defines the RCD program and its purpose, which is for the eradication of all inappropriate schools and the provision of water, sanitation, and electricity. And the committee has been on three oversight processes before this one to gauge progress on schools in the Eastern Cape, and that ends. Okay, if I...
Let's see. Okay, that page 3, that under the terms of reference goes up to the top of page 4. Any comments up to there before it looks the Scarlet Municipal Water Infrastructure Grant? Is it, those who are on the trip will know if it's properly captured. I was not there, so help us if you're happy that that is properly captured. Honorable,
thank you, Chair. I don't know whether you are wanting particular comments overall at this stage, or we're just commenting page by page as we go. But if I can just, the table that appears in the middle of page 3, it seems to be at odds with the paragraph immediately above it. I don't see how the two speak to each other. Can we maybe just get an explanation of that? Because it purports to show Eastern Cape, MW, IG, and our big project allocation for 14-15. The first one, for example, for Tabankulu is 13.7 million, but in the paragraph above it says that Alfred Mazzotis from municipality received budgets of 89.4 million. Now, I don't know how this ties up. Is this just the portion that we were looking at? Is it the budget for that? And is the rest is just part of the total budget? Am I understanding it correctly? I just wanted clarity there. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable McLaughlin. Yes, you are correct. Just underneath the last line there, I just recommend you just insert a line there. There to see allocations for Oar Tambo and Alfred Nzo district municipalities for the specific sites visited by the committee.
What I'll do at the end, I will allow members for all overall observations. Once we've, all what we need to do is to see whether the report captures our observations, and then obviously we'll have overall impressions about the situation there. Overall, my blog.
Sorry, Chairperson. In that paragraph itself, it says that Alfred Nzoa received MWIC budget of 89.4, and then further on it says Alfred Nzoa municipality received a total allocation of 143 million. Is the MWIC portion, is it part of that? I'm just wondering why we're reporting it in this particular way, because it's a bit confusing to read, because it seems that they get different allocations and they're not the same. I'm just trying to understand what we actually say here. Oar Tambo, for example, was allocated an amount of 284.7 million for the financial year, and then later on it says, well, it doesn't say anything more, it just says that, but previously it says they received an allocation of 54.8 million, for MWIC. What is the differential here? It just seems that I'm, I don't know whether I'm just being a bit obtuse this morning, or maybe I got to bed too late last night or something, but it's still adding up to me. Can I just have some clarity, please?
Thanks for the comment. Okay, that line that Alfred and Zoe allocation, it was just inserted there, is specifically for the RB allocation for the 2014-15 financial year. Yes.
Okay, till day 6. You must sleep in the honorable. Your observations are correct. It will be simplified so that is very clear. Page 4. Municipal water infrastructure grant. Or before that, yes.
Apologies, Honorable Chairperson. Now, that if we go back to that addition to that paragraph, which says to the specific sites visited by the committee. Now, my recollection of the sites visited is that Mr. Lenny Sori's development was not visited.
What?
Yeah, that's Mr. Lenny.
Oh, okay.
Zambia is correct. You plan to visit, but you never arrived. You were diverted. And you agree?
No,
you didn't know. There's something they didn't want you to see. Yeah. Okay. Page 3-4. Municipal water infrastructure.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson. Thanks.
Oh, that you were you raising?
No, it's fine.
Oh, okay.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, honorable members. The first paragraph that just explains what the MWIC is, which is an interim intermediate water supply program, which specifically is to provide short and medium term water supply solutions to areas identified as hotspots. And then the table there, which is actually contains important information, very important is that the expenditure there. For example, Alfred Zoe has at end of December 2014, there is no expenditure. And then for overcome expenditure is low. And then for Krasani, it's a little better. For Joe Gavi, there's no expenditure as well. And for Amatole, there's no expenditure. So those are key concerns for the committee. And the department did make a submission on the reasons for that and what they plan to do about that. The reasons are in the table underneath there. The first one is that municipalities do not comply with reporting templates, and the department submitted that they're going to do much more to help them comply with reporting requirements. And the second one is the non-compliance with the DORA framework, essentially. And then the undertaking was that the department will also continue to engage and help wherever they can with procurement challenges experienced by municipalities. And then the third one, which is also, okay, we're going to see later, it permeates across for both water services and for schools, which is challenges with appointed contractors. And the department did submit that there are project management interventions in place there to try and mitigate the risks. And then we begin, Alfred, and so, and that ends page 4.
Okay.
before we begin our session. So any comment there? Honorable McLennan.
Thank you, Chair. In the table, the top line says Alfred and Saul, where there's an allocation of 54 million and there's no expenditure whatsoever. But then in the end column, it says remaining allocation for Q3, zero. Although for Joe Carver, there's an allocation, some of which has been spent, there's zero expenditure percentage, but in the end column, there's still a balance remaining. And then I see it, the last one as well, Amatoni shows the same. There's an allocation, no spending, but there's no remaining allocation. Shouldn't those allocated amounts appear in the last column as well, where instead of the zeros? Because if they haven't spent any money, it must all still be available. Or has it been taken away? Is that what's happened? Has the money been removed from them?
It does look like, whereas there were allocations, they were never transferred to these municipalities. And I don't know they are sitting with the department.
Okay, this table I've taken from the presentation. Okay, the zero, the remaining allocation weight zero, something's wrong there. I'll just go in and check. Because yes, the transfers have not been made to zero, but the remaining allocation cannot also be zero. I'll just verify on the presentation by the department. We took it from there.
Maybe just to check that if they say Alfred and Zoe, 54 million, transfer zero for the quarter, expenditures December zero, does that mean that the Department of Water Affairs never transferred this money to this municipality? Is that what it means? Yes.
So the main allocation is not a transfer. So whether the transfer happened or not, I don't think it relevant. Is the allocation still there, or was that completely removed?
Yes. That's what we want to check. Firstly, does that mean the money was never transferred, and probably why? And if it was never transferred, where is it?
Thanks, Chair. If I may just come in. If you look at those two areas, Chair, those grants, it's a Schedule 6B grant, which is an indirect grant from the department. The department must spend those monies on behalf of the municipality, provided the municipality submit the correct plans and documentation in compliance with all its requirements as per the DORA explains it under its grant. Now, when the municipality has not complied with those requirements, then the department is not able to transfer the money or to spend the money on behalf of the department because it's a grant in kind. That's one aspect. The other aspect of it, Chair, is that there has been a case where the Alfred Zo, Honorable Tobaza will remember that this matter was discussed at length. Alfred Zo still have a number of outstanding invoices that have not yet been submitted to the Department of Water Affairs, and therefore the department has not made payment of those invoices. So in the case of saying when we receive an invoice from the department, we then start to attach the money and pay for whatever that project that has been completed through the processing of those invoices. But if the invoices are still outstanding, the money will not be given to the municipality. Hence, it's only the Schedule 5Bs that has actually been spent, because those are your direct grants to municipalities, which are spent by municipalities themselves. And it's easier to transfer them to municipalities than the indirect grant. Because before it gets spent, there must be an evidence that comes to the department.
So, explain the last column, remaining zero.
What we can do, say, on the last column is to check the allocation for the third quarter, because I know that allocation is there, but we cannot just remember the figure. So their presentation did not reflect on the allocation, but the allocation must be there, irrespective of whether it has been paid or not, but it must be there, yes. But in terms of the expenditure, those were the explanations that we got, and those were the issues that were raised. I think Zoe is sitting at invoices of about 27 million rand that have not been given to the department to settle the indirect grants.
So the point was that if 54 million was earmarked to be spent on behalf of Alfred Zoe and was never transferred, that 54 million should be available. So it can't be zero.
Yeah.
I think that's the point the honorable members are saying. So maybe if we can verify that, unless the department has taken it somewhere, then they can say zero because we've now given it to another municipal, so you won't see it there. But can we please verify that? Yeah. Honorable Fee?
Yeah.
Oh, you're not done.
Yes, if you wouldn't mind, sir, if I could just go to the table below as well, the challenges and recommendations. I have a huge concern with the recommendations. We're being very nice and forgiving these recommendations. As far as I'm concerned, the people who are not performing should be disciplined and fired. The contractors who are not performing, their contracts should be cancelled and new contractors should be employed. The way we're going about things there, this job is never going to get done. You're going to keep on patting people on the back and say, oh, shame, you didn't perform this time. Never mind, try again. And I don't know how long we can carry on doing that for. It really doesn't work. That one contractor we spoke to was on their fourth letter already of non-compliance and put on terms. And here we were still talking about it and trying to be nice. If they don't perform, the contract should be stopped. That's it. There's provision in the agreements to provide for it. And yet we don't comply with the provisions. Not us, but the departments concerned, the implementing agents, are not enforcing the contracts. It's no wonder they run out of budget and they don't get finished on time because the contractors know there's no consequence. We can just carry on and perform however we please and it all gets forgiven and washed under the carpet and so they carry on. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Manana.
No, thank you very much. With regards to the recommendations, I think these recommendations are from the department, not from us.
Okay.
That is why they are reflecting as it is.
Our own. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Honorable McClellan, this we're just reflecting there. This is what the department says. Maybe at the end we can then say, as a department, with our observation, what do we say? We can come back to your proposal that where contractors are not doing their work, they can't be allowed to continue on and on. But we will come to that. Honorable Shopestol and then Honorable Fick.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think for the first time in the history of this committee, I support the Honorable Mark. I can't. Yeah, because you see, there must be Operation Pagisa now. We can't go on and on playing with people's lives. Municipalities are there to service the people. And what the municipalities do affects the people directly on a day-to-day basis. And I think as this committee, we are serious about how the monies of the state are spent, and we must really put our foot down. We can't be having sorry type of story. People must get consequences for neglecting to serve the people, because while the ordinary people suffer on the ground, they get their salaries. That's my problem.
Honorable Fick.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. That table one, while I understand it has been taken from the report of the department, our oversight visit was to Alfred Zoe and Tambo, but we've also included information of other municipalities. There is, I'm not disagreeing, but is that right? Should it be included in the report, even though the table has been taken from another report?
Explanation? Yes.
If I may just come in on that one. I think the intention of that table, Honourable Member, was to really reflect to Honourable Members the performance levels around these municipalities. To say, as much as our oversight was on Alfred Zoe and Boaz Tambo, but let's also, because we've got the benefit of this information, let's reflect of what other municipalities are doing. For instance, if you look at the Kizani municipality, Kizani is actually sitting at 63.3% in terms of percentage expenditure, while Atlanta is sitting at zero. You see? So it gives you that kind of analysis and comparison. You look at the Owatambo is sitting at 11%, and remember, it's a third quarter expenditure. That's the intention, the whole point for members to say, as we go forward, we apply our mind around the
point made, so we can have the bigger picture. Honorable Fiki Sepe. What I'm going to do, honorable members, at the end, will give you an opportunity for overall observations once we are done with the looking at what is reflected. We are now on page, we are basically done with page 4. We're now looking at those that you visited individually, starting with Alfred Nzo on page, end of page 4, just start there, to page 5.
Thanks, Chair. Okay. At the end of page 4 is just introduction there for Alfred Nzo District Municipality. On this page is to report on the submission that were made to the committee by the municipality itself. The first table just speaks to the backlog in the Alfred Nzo in terms of water infrastructure, and the important thing to note is that half of the households, or 53.7% of households, do not have access to water, which is the first table, the main point there. And then the second table, with regards to sanitation backlogs, what's important to note that it's slightly better, although it's not the way we want it, of course. Percentage of households served, it's 67%. So that's the key information from the tables above there. The first paragraph underneath the table, allocations were given for the MWIC for the district municipalities for 13-14, and 100% of that was spent. And then for 14-15, 64.8 million was allocated to the district municipality. And then the second paragraph just seeks to outline that the committee had intended to go to the Selene Storage Development Project, but rather the committee was taken to the Nongwala Springs Development. And then the line just after that seeks to detail what's contained in the storage development project, which was allocated 1.5 in 13-14. And 2 million in 1450, and all the funds have been spent, and is currently operated by the district municipality. And then in terms of the Nongwala Spring development, was allocated 300,000 in 13-14 financially, and was completed. And the project itself entailed refurbishment of the water source, construction of the one communal standby, okay, which the committee had comments about, which we're going to see in the observations, and the connection to the existing bulk mains, which is the last paragraph just before we go to Owatambo. And then moving on to Owatambo, we just specified that the specific amounts allocated to the district municipality. In 13-14, 14.9 was allocated in 13-14 financially, and 14.829 was spent. And then for 14-15, 89 million has been allocated, and only 11% spent. That ends page 5.
Okay, that's the story of Alfred Nzo. Well captured. We'll come back to what our impression is, but it's well captured. Yes. I just want to suggest that below the table on table 5, the paragraph that starts the ANDM, I suggest that we write the full name, and then as following after we can abbreviate, so that anybody who reads it
knows right at the beginning what we are talking about.
Okay. That will be done if Alfred Zot District Municipality write it in full first and ANGM in brackets. yeah, okay, we can see the story then. So I see the Lizana no water 91%. I don't know how these people live. 90% no water. It's a scary situation. Okay, Oatambo. This is your hometown, Shem. Where do you guys get water from?
Far away.
91% more water. That's scary. That's very scary. Okay. Oatambo.
Oh, okay. I explained that last line language just speaks to the allocations. And then on top of that, if it's a Schedule 5B grant. Okay, for our Tambo water and sanitation backlogs, what's important to note them is from the 304,000 households in the district, just over half of the households do not have access to water. And for sanitation, as well, just almost a third, which is at 78,000 households. So, okay, that's the important information from the table. And then the paragraph underneath speaks to the Dondela and Temukasi borehole development, which in 14-15 received 23.1 million, and of which only 2 million had been spent as at the end of December. And the project is intended to benefit 5,344 households, and the scope of the project includes spring protection, equipping borehole pump houses, construction of rising main pipelines to storage reservoirs, and water reticulation to stand pipes. On this project, the department did submit that they have experienced a number of challenges, and they've listed them there. Climate and topography and vandalism and delays in the procurement process as well, and funding shortfalls. And okay, and that ends the Oatambo District Municipality. And then we move on to RDIC. Okay, the first paragraph just explains the rationale for RDIC, which was introduced in 2007 to mainly deal with bulk infrastructure in the water sector. And then the last paragraph on page 6, RDIC expenditure for the Eastern Cape as a whole stood at 593, which was 57.38%. And then in addition to the total expenditure, the department reported that invoices amounting to 83 million had been submitted by the various regions for processing. And then the list, okay, let me stop.
Yeah, that's just the list of those. Well, catch up, Honorable Members. Honorable McFlaughlin.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to comment on the table, the top page 6, table 6. I think it's significant that whoever drafted the table didn't provide us with any percentages, because the percentages always give you a fairly clear picture of what the situation is, and I would like to see that table redrawn with percentages in it. It's probably a table we got from somewhere, but if we could just add a couple of columns to it, if possible, to show the percentages, because I think it presents a scary picture that you don't get from just the numbers. Thank you, sir.
Percentages will be added. Any other thing on that page? Nothing. Page 7 is just the list of those areas. All their projects. Okay. The last paragraph?
Yes. Thanks, Chair. The Mount Alice bulk water supply scheme is the actual, the committee was there, was on site. It comprises of four weirs in different streams, and there was also a bulk pipeline construction of approximately 32 kilometers, which the committee commented on as well. And the last line there, the Alfred and Zoe Fisherman's Board reported that progress was at 90%. However, they also submitted that there was overall slow progress by the appointed contractor and the pipeline was slow. Okay, due to there are reasons they've submitted that the supply of pipes, labor, funding, as well as the water resource in the actual area. And then we come to the observations and findings.
Comments before observations and findings. Honorable McClough.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just amongst the bullet points there, I don't see one of the challenges that was mentioned to us at the time when we went to the site was the, I don't know what you call them, but the concrete pieces that the pipes lie on. Whoever was the sponsor, they'd forgotten to order them. None were provided. The pipes are just lying on the ground, and they're supposed to sit on of concrete stand pieces, if you like, and those are also still outstanding and had to be sourced from somewhere and brought to the site. But there had been a slip up somewhere that had just been omitted, somehow overlooked. Thank you.
What are they called? These concrete things? Do they have a name?
Just pipe stands, I guess, would be.
Pipe stands, not yes. All that. That the contractor forgot.
As Dr. Fleet suggests, Chairperson, cradles would probably be a good word. The concrete cradles for the pipe.
Concrete cradles, not orders.
Yes, thank you.
By the contract.
Yeah.
Was there no project manager?
It was the manager who informed me that.
Observations. Now, I think here you will have opportunity to make your observations and recommendations. Honorable Fit.
Can I just go back to the page 7? Sorry about this for clarification. It's just about the fourth line from the bottom, and it's because I don't understand it. I would like the reader to understand. They talk about 76 males, 59 females, and then 123 youth males and 54 youth females. Now, are they included in, I understand what a youth female is, I do, well, and a youth male, but the numbers just don't look too clear for me.
They don't add up to the 3.1.
Well, no, they're just the difference between a male and a youth male.
Here's a solution. That's right. Back to 8 observations. Take us through. Honourable members, feel free to add if you think your observations are not as reflected. Those on the two.
Okay. The first one speaks to the committee's unhappiness of being to us taken to our site. They did not plan to, and the committee actually views this as not acceptable. And that last line, the committee is most ready to access the most remote areas to ascertain that services are delivered in this area. And then the second, okay, should I just go on?
Yes, Honorable McLaughlin.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to see us mention in number one that that fact that we weren't taken to see the project that we'd intended to caused suspicion amongst us. Across the board in the committee, we suspected that we were deliberately being diverted from seeing something they didn't want us to see. What they did show us was bad, but made us really think what they didn't want us to see must have been really terrible. And I think we should express it in our observations. Thank you.
Okay, great. Number two.
Okay, the second one speaks to the project which we were actually taken to and observations made by the committee that some of the work has been done overnight and how the committee feels about that. And also the committee viewed the location of the communal standby as not accessible to members of the community, especially for the elderly.
Okay, meaning that because they knew you were coming, they did something the night before.
Yeah, the morning.
I don't know whether it was a plumber or what, was called around 2 o'clock in the morning to go fix the thing. And that's why we found still working. It was right. You could see it had just been covered. Okay.
And the chairperson, it wasn't the perception because we are members of parliament and not plumbers and technicians, but we were told, and that's what I think Honourable Kovar is saying. One of the gentlemen that did that, a passion of job, told, mentioned to Honourable Matlopa, I think it was. Sorry, yeah. So it was a fact.
The other lady speaker of Alfonso. So we decided to sit under the tree to wait for the delegation. Majority of the people couldn't reach the place. And then this gentleman informed us that no, I was woken up by 2 o'clock to come and fix this.
Like 2 a.m.
Yes.
And that's to complete. Yeah. Now, this about 50 rands worth of work, which the project was worth 300,000, was placed on top of an old existing structure that was completed in 2003. So that was a fact. What I would like us to include there is that according to our assessment of the project, we don't believe that was a 300,000 rand, although I see in the report it indicates that it was 133,000 rand that they actually spent. I notice in this report. But the value of what we've seen is not what we saw.
Okay.
It's not what was spent, sorry.
Okay, we'll capture that. That was, we're on 6.2, no? Or 3. Yes, sir, another caller.
I don't know whether I missed the part of the pipe being, the project being delayed because the pipe was imported from China.
Do you have it somewhere?
Yeah.
It's in relation
on the Mount Elif. Is it still there?
Yeah.
I see 6.8 talks about Mount Elif.
Yeah.
We could capture there. Oh yeah, it is there.
Yeah.
Oh okay.
Yeah, it is there. Okay, I think that the chief editor, you'll help us if you think that what members are raising is captured somewhere. That just indicate. I can see it. I can see the point that Honorable Baba is 6.8. Yeah. But also the members will say if you think that observation is captured properly, strong enough, because one of the things we want to do, observation and findings must lead to a situation where if we make recommendation on what is to be done, we have captured our observation properly. Okay, 6.3, Honorable Manana.
Yes, Chairperson, before that,
yeah.
Can I take you back to page 7? The numbers there, towards the last chart, the last paragraph,
yeah.
They are not tallying. The job created there, the numbers are not tallying. It's 321 instead of, it's 312 instead the total number.
Okay. You get it, Sandy? Okay. The 6.3 regard to M week.
6.3 is just to express the concern of the committee regarding the expenditure as we observed in the table that is not acceptable. And then similarly for the condition for the RD as well, so 6.3 and 4, it's lack of expenditure for M with 6.3 and then for RD for 6.4.
Okay, we are concerned about lack of expenditure. We will see what to do when we look at recommendation well captured. 6.45.
Okay, there is also note the frustration of the committee with the invoices that need to be processed by the department that are not completed fully, and also compliance with the DORA, which leads to the withholding of funds by the national department, and yeah, 6.5.
Okay, invoices not processed, no compliance with DORA. Committee knows that. Yes, Honorable.
Okay, that withholding of funds, is that true? I believe that it's not only the withholding of funds that happens, it's that funds is now taken away and they don't get it again, which is more serious than withholding of funds, because withholding of funds means they will still get it at a later date. That's not my understanding of the way it's done now.
Yes, response.
Okay, the withholding of funds here just refers to when the invoice is not complete. Yes, the budget is within the fiscal, but the department cannot allocate funds. So by the end of the financial year, now department have to apply for rollovers and then all of that. So the funds might not get to the intended beneficiaries.
6.6.
It's also similar frustration with the invoices, but the committee here just makes the point that the Department of Water and Sanitation must assist the stakeholders to expedite the submission of invoices, and also that the delays have an impact on small businesses.
Honorable McLaughlin, you want to assist them?
Thank you, Chair. I just think we need to mention as well that the municipalities themselves each have water departments. Those departments should have the capacity to assist the stakeholders in the submission of these invoices as well. It's not just the Department of Water, it's the local departments as well just seem to be sitting on their hands doing nothing and waiting for the Department of Water to come and sort out the problem. But the competency needs to be all the way down the line. Thank you, sir.
Okay, that's correct. Will be added 6.7. Zandi, you've captured that spirit. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, 6.7. The committee was very concerned with the planning, especially integrated planning. For example, for RV grants. Once the water infrastructure is in place, but there isn't a regulation at district level. And then the last line there, the committee further noted what concern. Okay, this is something we picked up in the report. Different reported water and sanitation backlogs between the department and the two district municipalities.
Okay. Honorable Shopperston.
Thanks, Chairperson. Unfortunately, you did not see me. I was raising on the previous one.
Oh, sorry.
But over and above saying that the Department of Water Affairs or other department, we should actually, as this committee, communicate with the Department of Kota of that province to find out what it is doing to assist, because it is important for them to actually assist municipality and also the district municipality in line with the Municipal Finance Management Act.
Thank you, Chair. My comment is on 6.7. The statement here that Alfred Mazor was having a problem with the funding shortfall, and this was the reason given as to why this project wasn't being completed. I find this absolutely incredible, because the Department of Water and Sanitation is the worst performing department in government when it comes to spending their money. And yet municipalities are saying, we're not funded, we don't have sufficient funds to complete the job. There's something wrong here, Chair. I need to express my concern in this, that one of my observations, if you will, is the fact that there's just a total disconnect between the local departments, their engineering services sectors, and the Department of Water or the provincial department, whatever the case might be, because there's money sitting that doesn't get spent, and the municipalities aren't able to do their work because there's no funding for it. The channel just isn't there, or there's too much compliance issue, or something seems to be blocking this. But I think it needs serious investigation to find out why we can't get this on stream and working properly. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Misalignment, lack of integration, and concern that funding not been made available by municipalities that need it. Just for a matter of interest, was the committee briefed why in Bizana people only have 8% supply of water? You didn't ask them. I'm just curious about that 91% of no water in Bizana that we saw earlier. But what is the problem? What did they say? There were a lot of challenges around that briefing. So there were no actually detailed information and kind of focus on issues because of the state of the meeting, the way it was started. So those details we couldn't find, the committee couldn't find time to actually interrogate them. But what I have picked up is that maybe the committee, because the committee is going to adopt this report, it's an opportunity for the committee still to express itself in terms of the observation now, to say the committee in Table 4, for instance, it has noticed that there is still a backlog of about 53.7% population and agriculture that's still without water. And therefore, if you remember very well, the MWIC grant is a 3-year program. Now, the intention around the EMU grant was to say, while you are still developing long-term mechanisms to actually deliver water, but come up with a short-term intervention. So maybe the committee can then, from that observation, can then set a requirement to say, the lifespan of the EMU grant should be extended, given that this is evidence enough that you still have a larger population of the area that do not have necessary water. You might find that it's not only actually that has got these kinds of challenges, but most district municipalities have got
located around the former homelands, the rural areas, because that's where most problems are actually arising around water and sanitation. So I'm saying to maybe the committee can note this as an observation, as a finding, so that they can recommend in the recommendation to say the lifespan of the grant should not be terminated or should be extended, so that at least you give two or three more years to deal with this, even though it will not be a solution overall, but at least you have given some thought. It's the same thing also on tabletop share. On tabletop share and sanitation, you know, in rural areas in particular, actually there's what we call the RIC, Rural Infrastructure Household Grant, that is used to actually install the sanitation system. So that grant also has come to an end. In this current budget, the minister has actually outlined that. So these are kinds of recommendations that the committee might really want to make based on this evidence.
Yeah, but that's not my problem. My problem is that people are not doing their work. They extend the grant for another 5 years and so on. So the point I'm making is that why is Bizana does not have water 20 years after democracy? That's my problem. And not that money is not there. We can see money is there. There's a lot of money in water and sanitation, but people don't have water. So we can go to the minister and say, well, give this grant another 10 years. That's not a guarantee. So I think when we look at recommendations, we need explanations from these municipalities. And I like what Honorable Schopenstall was saying. There's a Department of Local Government in the Eastern Cape. They must explain what is happening here. So this report will help us, because we'll pick up these things and we'll be able to say we need to write back to these people. Some of them must be called here to Parliament. We're not going to run after them. We would have to call them here. They must come here and explain. And as Honorable McLaughlin has said, if people can't do their work, they must be removed. Contractors that are not able to do their work must be removed, cancelled. Others, we're not going to help people. But I think let's look at these issues. That issue catch up my attention, because I didn't understand why people can only have 7% or 8% supply of water when there are resources made available to sort out the problem. Honorable Mekun, you'll follow Honorable Mana and Honorable Thomas. You can start.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just a general comment on your comment now. I don't know whether it's been reported to you, but overall the impression we got was that we were being misled. People were not happy to deal with us. The mayor didn't pitch up to welcome us when we got to Alfred Mazor. They sent the deputy mayor and he came with a story that the mayor was off sick. We didn't see any councillors. We only dealt with officials. The speakers never pitched up. The mayors didn't pitch up, except for the poor deputy mayor, who had to then sort of step in and try and handle everything. And he was obviously very nervous about what he was doing. When we got to Owatambo municipality, we arrived very late because of this long distance trip that they'd taken us on, and they'd all been waiting there for us for about 4 hours. So when we got there, they were very agitated, and then the system that they claimed had been working earlier in the day had suddenly failed. Honorable Manana pointed out to them that they'd used the same excuse on her 5 years previously, so it didn't really wash away, 8 years previously, however long it was. The general impression we had was that we weren't being told half of this. I don't recall being given this information while we were there. The researchers have got it afterwards, or maybe at the time, but it wasn't presented to us in the form it is here. When you ask, did we ask the question? Well, we didn't know that this was specifically the problem. We could see there was a general problem around, but we didn't get the specifics of it at the time. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Manan.
No, Chairperson, indeed, the situation there was very chaotic. And there was no formal presentation. Even the municipal manager was not there. There was a director from the office of the manager. And they promised us that they are going to send the presentation to us, which I don't know whether they do receive but their presentation. This is the one. It was very difficult to engage on some of the issues. And one of the issues that you're raising, it was not mentioned while we're still there, so that you can make some follow-up.
I just wanted to say that some of the information that is here arises from the questions that could not be answered whilst we were there, and we requested for written submissions, and that's why you would find some of the information added here. But also on the issue that you specifically raised about 91% of the population not receiving water in that area. One of the things that we found very depressing indeed, I must say, when we were in Mount Elif was that it does seem to us that people are comfortable with the short-term solutions. When you ask the question, for instance, there was very excited about that project supplying water to Mount Elif, the town. Because we were standing on a high-level area, you could see vast tracts of rural populations. And we asked the question, but is this water going to reach out to the people? They said, no, it's going to the town itself. The long-term plan, well, there is a decision about the dam that must be built in that area, taken some time back. The stage at which this dam would be is the preparations for this dam to be built, where all of these wells are then going to be fitting from. We are told all sorts of stories, then the feasibility study, the environmental impact assessment, which is going to take years, and the dam now we hear is going to be constructed somewhere in 2013. No, not 2013, 2023. Now, these 91% people who don't have water are still going to wait another, 8 years. And you don't get the sense, Jefferson, that there is urgency to address the issue of the shortage of water and sanitation, particularly for rural areas. If it goes to the town when people are comfortable, they think they have accomplished. You get that sense. The rest of the other things, other people can. And we did express our grave concern over that kind of attitude. A small piece which was still not connected of the pipe, members would remember, I don't recall the name of that river we went. The pipe that it was said to have been imported from China. A small little piece can't be found to just connect and then start supplying water to Mount Elif. And that we found rather disturbing. And one understands why the concern the chairperson is raising. But these are the issues that we tried to dig out, and these are the answers we got, and we got the sense that there simply is no sense of urgency. There is simply no rush to deal with the long-term plan so that people in the rural villages can actually receive water and sanitation.
Just quickly, Jefferson, to add to that, it's not as though there weren't enough people, because there was an abundance of supply of human resources, because wherever we went, the stakeholder meetings were full. There was sometimes only standing space, although not all the people contributed to the visit, because some of them drove around. Particularly, there was a woman from Water and Sanitation, I think, who drove around in her own car, all on her own, for the whole week. Yeah. Okay, I don't want to say anything to
So it was, you know, so they were, but when we wanted information, and as the previous speakers, and I'm not going to repeat that, is that the facts were not forthcoming. So it was disappointing.
I think Honorable Shop was helping us that with the information we have, observation, recommendation, we are going to also have to talk to the province. There is a Department of Local Government. We need to also engage with them because they need to know this. They need to intervene. So as we engage Water Affairs, we are going to have to engage. They can't leave the situation like this, especially if resources are made available to help people. We can't have a situation where people continue to languish in poverty, they don't have water. I'm sure the pipe they are buying in China you can find in South Africa. I'm sure South Africa is a very advanced country. I don't know what kind of pipe is this that you have to go and find in China. Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, Chairperson, I have come to the conviction that, you know, people who are in the provinces employed by the state, they are sort of in some comfort zone as far as monies of the state are concerned. They think there is a very big drum where money is seated somewhere in Cape Town or Pretoria. All they have to do is to make a requisition or wait for the end of the year for the budget. It is upon this committee to make sure that the resources of the state are well spent, to actually make everybody in the country aware that we don't have much. We don't have much resources available to waste around. We've wasted enough time by delaying to actually operationalize this committee, because this is the committee on which South Africa will stand or fall. And we need to invite these people, take them out of their comfort zone. They must come here and talk to us. Maybe when they talk to us, not their portfolio committees, they will understand that we need business. Monies of the state must be used for the purpose for which they are meant. And we have to be very, very, very careful when we use this money, because we are in bad times. The economic growth is slow. And people must understand that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just with regards to the alteration and making that, may I suggest that we also add the Ntumbankulu municipality as well, because it's also a very low level of service, and we're not just concerned with Mazin. So it is Mbazana, but the Ntumbankulu as well, please. And then just on that observation number 6.8, when it comes to the pipes from China, I had a protracted discussion with the project manager, who, give credit where credit is due, she was a lady who knew the subject very well, and she was very passionate about it, because I had the same argument with you. Why are we getting pipes in from China? I know they make the same pipes in America, they make them in England today. It's a well-known product in this industry. And she explained to me that it's specifically because of the concentrations of chemicals in the soil there that they have to use that particular pipe, and that the Chinese supply was the only one they could access at the time. However, I got to realize, talking to various people, that the problems here have been that the Chinese supplier hadn't been paid and for one of the deliveries, and that's why this delay came in, that they just put down their foot and said, well, we're not supplying any more pipes until we get our money. And after a whole year's delay, basically, because of that fact, this is this whole problem that goes back to what we've already noted about the invoices not flowing through. And in this process as well, they didn't order the bends, as Honorable Kabaza has already said. And there the project sits nearly complete, but you can do absolutely nothing with it because you can't put any water into the pipes because it's all going to flow out at the nearest bend because there's no curve. How long it's been as it is when we saw it, there's no way of telling, and I couldn't ascertain that. But my fear is just that unless we put more and more pressure on them, it's just going to stay like that. And that they'll, as Honorable Sorter says, there's no urgency. They couldn't be bothered whether it happens this week, next year. It doesn't really bother them. And I think it's something we need to address because obviously it has a greater effect. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue of the provincial committees, I don't think they're doing their job because when going to the oversight, you can find that other places, they don't even know where they are. They don't even know the size of the project. They start going to go there when we are there. So also on the issue of these pipes, the imported ones, we ask them the guarantee of that pipes. They don't even know how long will they last, how many years can those pipes last. So it was also our concern. Thank you.
Okay, it's quite clear that the situation is quite bleak. I think what we should say to Seb and the team that our report must show that the situation is bad. And our recommendation must really be very drastic, because if we do that, we will send a message to everybody in the county that it can't be business as usual, people doing this. And so I'm saying that looking at the report, we must also identify these problems, because we will bring them to the attention of water and sanitation, and also the province itself. But some of these people who, when the committee comes, they are not there, they must be summoned to parliament.
Yeah.
Those mayors that didn't come, so these are not the ones on visit, we must call them here, because they didn't come when we're there, and they must come with answers. We must give them enough information that when they come here, we want an explanation on this, and invite the relevant other department. Because if we do proper report, this report can also go to the premiers of the provinces high up to say, this is in your province, do you know about this? And because this might just be a tip of the iceberg, because the committee focus on that. Once you look at the whole province, you might find more problems of this nature. So I think the spirit of the report must show that the situation is very bad. We must not sugarcoat it as bad. And if it's bad, it needs radical solutions. But as Honorable Kavala saying, people may not have water until 2023. If people will go according to the pace of these people who don't do work, yeah, when people who don't do work, at worst, money might even disappear. Work not been done, and people continue to suffer. While the parliament of the people is there, it must never happen. Anything on this sanitation part 6, 8, 9, 10? Yes. Honorable Shankar.
Thank you, Chair. I was just suggesting that when we write to the people to invite them, we must also say that on our visit we could not be accountable. accompanied by the mayor, and we do not want them to send their representatives. We want the people who are supposed to be here, who we could not see because they were sick, and this time they must be here.
Agreed. Anything on this circle, this part, before we go to the schools? Yes, Honorable Nyalu.
I think it's still going to 6.9, whereby the local chamber district municipality, it received 4 consecutive audits this name. Yes, four. The problem on this municipality, they told us that they've got 6 CEOs. So my question was that who is paying the 6 CEOs on one municipality? So it's when you can say that there is a problem. It seems one do his things, other side another one do his things. So yeah, this municipality has got a problem.
That's over time.
Yes, there was someone from Treasury who did report this, that at some point there were a whole lot of directors and I don't know what else. And that's where the issue Honorable Nyalung is raising came about. And it becomes very very bad when people deny these things in the presence of an official from National Treasury who says, yes, I was here and I found these things. And right in his presence, they say, no, there is no such a thing. And that's why we raise the question then, give us your kind of so that we see who is who and who is where here. And we couldn't see. But you can clearly see that there is an expenditure of public money here which is not according to what it should have been. Yeah. And National Treasury say, yes indeed, it is true. But they say in his presence no. And in our presence they deny.
Okay. Yes.
Chair, if I may just revise the discussion around the issues that is raised by Honorable and Honorable Swabaza, just to add probably more flesh. One of the issues that the director from Treasury was raising was that with our Chamber district, things that have actually led to these 4 consecutive disclaimers, one was the issue of the misalignment between the budget and IDP of the municipality, which is quite critical. Because if you don't align your budget to the IDP, then you won't be able to deliver. You still remain with the 90% people don't have access to water because your budget is doing something else and your IDP is talking something else. That's one. 2 was the issue of the multi-year budgeting. As we know that in South Africa we've got a multi-year budget that medium term financial framework. When you budget for this year, you also have your outer years. So in that municipality, that has not been happening. The 3rd one is the fact that the municipality itself is top heavy. The structure is top heavy. They've got more directors than the subordinates, and some of them which are not necessarily managing anything. And so that's what makes the strategy top heavy. But also the major concern around that was raised by Treasury was that the municipality is not in a position to raise its own revenues. It relies mostly on grants, on conditional grants. So 95% of its revenue is conditional grant. Now, how do you then begin to have a top-heavy structure when you are relying on conditional grant? Because it means to say the money that is supposed to be going to service delivery as a grant is going to salaries. That's when the issue of the wage bill came in. The other issue was also that you pointed out the billing system, that the Ower Tambo is facing.
facing a lot of challenges around the billing system on electricity and water and stuff like that. Yeah, that's in a nutshell. That was a major.
Honorable short question.
Honorable Chair, I think we might like to take a look at the maybe last three consecutive reports of the Auditor General and see how he has phrased the whole thing, because it seems the situation is chaotic. Two, it is quite clear that since they are not able to raise their own funds, but they have got very many executives, there was no compliance with the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act in the expending of the money. So we need to look at those two areas. Thank you.
Thank you. Our conclusion on this section, I think our observations have been noted. Situation is bad, and we are going to have to intervene. Because the visit of the committee to areas cannot just be a once-off visit and that's it. We need to act on our observations going forward, so we correct the situation. So we will also ask, when we call them here, we will also want to know who are they employing. We want the organogram, we want to know who they are employing. We can't have a small rural municipality full of managers who manage nothing. It's not right. Should I go to schools? What's our observation on schools? Or you want to start by telling us where we went first? On page 9?
Thanks. Okay, on page 9, at the bottom, it's just to list the ACD program, the reason why it exists, and the NTEP allocation for the program, NTEP and page 9. Okay, on page 10, the table on top, okay, the important part is just the right at the end, on the right. The total targets, 510, and completed so far, it's 90. And yeah, that's just something important to note there. And yeah, they've done half for sanitation, but not so well for water and electricity. Okay, overall expenditure, the paragraph underneath there is 37% for the Eastern Cape as at end of December 2014, and it is 31.1% for the Free State as at the 27th, 2014. And then for the Eastern Cape progress to date, it just listed different contractors and how far they are. The first paragraph, the IDT, has been allocated 12 schools and they've completed 9 so far. And then in the Free State, the IDT allocated 9 schools, they've only completed 1. And the department is looking into revising the scope of the IDT due to poor performance. And then for Kuha, they've been allocated 25 schools and they've completed 16 schools so far. And then 4 schools, just to correct the 4 schools in the paragraph there, are at 76%. And then for the Eastern Cape Department of Public Works, they've been allocated 16 schools. 4 projects have been completed to date. And the other schools are at various stages. And then
when you say 4 projects, I mean 4 schools.
Oh yes, 4 schools.
Okay.
4 schools, yes. Okay, yes, 4 schools have been completed to date. And then the rest of the 12 schools are at various stages there. 7.2, which is not the actual schools visited by the committee. The first school is the small school we went to, the senior primary school, which was complete, began on 23 January 2012 and was completed in July 13. And the budget was 10 million and they actually exceeded and spent 14.2 million. And the school itself is a one grade R classroom and seven classroom and one multimedia library center. And then 7.22, which are the big schools that the committee went to. Or should I just continue? Or
okay,
just finish this. Yeah. Okay, Chief Henry Bockland, as senior secondary school, and Becky Zulu, these are the big schools that the committee went to. For the first one, the budget allocation was 74 million, and the progress is actually low, only 22% complete so far out of the plan, 63%. And then for the second school, 81.9 million is allocated and began on 21 June 2014. And planned completion date was 21 April 2015. And the progress rate is also 22%. And then that paragraph lists the reasons why the slow progress, that the school construction is 13 weeks behind schedule, and the reasons that the department submitted to the committee are the first one is contractors non-performance, and then delays in the commencement of construction following the site handover, and inadequate resourcing, inadequate resourcing by the contractor, and then the poor quality of work, and then there was also social issues whereby Chief Henry Bockland was invaded twice by the community. And then the department submitted some of the things that they were embarked on to try and rectify the situation, or some of the things that they have done included requiring that the contractor to submit a recovery plan, and that they've also issued the fourth default notice to the contractor, and that they will be monitoring the contractor closely. The last school it was allocated to 9.1 million and was meant to be complete by 10 February 2015. The progress then was 88% of the planned 90% at the time, and the department did submit that the contractor's performance has been good, although was behind schedule by 1 week due to the weather and also due to errors in design and drawings.
Okay. Those are the schools visited. Any comments before we go to observations? It's really to capture the information. I guess more discussion will be on the observations. But have we captured properly the schools visited?
Correction, sorry, on the top of page 10, that is actually table number 7.
Yeah.
And then, I know this will be corrected, but
table 7.
Table 7, yeah.
Okay.
And then 7.1, second paragraph, second sentence of the second paragraph starts with four room schools, should be four schools.
Four schools, 7, the four room, four room. If the information is probably captured, can we go to our own observations? Is it as bad as the sanitation water? Who wants to start observations? Okay, let's allow. Okay, you start there.
Okay, the first observation speaks to the contract management issues on the big schools that the committee went to. Becky Zulu and Chief Henry Bockland. Key issue there, poor performance by the contractor, that's the observation of the committee, and that it, the two projects are 13 weeks behind schedule. The committee also observed that the same contractor had a history of poor performance since the inception of the program itself. And then the committee also knows the submission by the department that while a risk assessment had been done on the impact of a possible termination, the committee on press upon the department that all conditions stipulated in the contract that relate to poor performance need to be implemented.
Poor performance noted by the committee. Honorable McLaughlin.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. In many instances, it's not just the poor performance of the contractor, but it appears to be the fact that the contractor was obliged, in terms of his contract, to subcontract local labour. And this was causing a problem because the people they were contracting weren't capable of doing the job, and the clerk of works, I think four or five times, it told them one particular wall to break it down and start again. Obviously that has a costly implication because you have to now get more material every time and redo the job over and over again. There was supposed to be a program in place to capacitate the local community, these kind of people who are being employed, so that they would learn how to do the job. But that just didn't seem to be happening for whatever reason. So the problem has been compounded on the site itself where the jobs are not happening. And I think we would just need to make mention that not just the contractors, but the subcontractors as well. That's where the problem comes in. I also heard, you know, when you go on these visits, you talk to as many people as you can outside of the official meetings. And, for example, the site agent was complaining that this particular contractor apparently has a head office in Joburg, and they're just not interested. They couldn't care less about the fact that it's 13 weeks overdue. They weren't interested in trying to speed things up and getting the bricks on site on time. And his complaint was that you've got a whole team of people ready to work and do the job, and they can't because the materials don't get on site on time. And no matter how much he pushes and shoves, from his point of view, there's just no concern about it. Again, that same thing that Honourable Shorfis had already mentioned about, there's no sense of urgency anyway. The woman I spoke to, who was the community liaison officer, also said that although the contractor was reporting to us that there was an ongoing labour problem, or not a labour problem, sorry, that the local community had invaded the premises, she said it's not the case, it was resolved. There was an instance where they came and people objected to the fact that they didn't want the school to be there, they wanted it in another location, and they met with them and the issue was resolved. But the contractor was still using it as an excuse that this was an ongoing thing, whereas it wasn't in fact the case. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Anything on page 11? No, page 12. The observations.
Okay, on page 12. Okay, this is also the center of the challenges that the committee experienced. Contract management, and also the committee has emphasized that lack of proper planning, which resulted in projects not being completed on time. That's 8.3. For 8.4, the committee does note the submission by the department that in the event that there is a termination of contract, that there will not be additional costs incurred on the fiscals. Oh, okay, and 8.5 speaks to the point just raised by Honorable McLaughlin that the workmanship and the quality thereof, okay, the workmanship of the subcontractors, which was also a major contributing factor to the delays in the construction of schools, and that structures had to be demolished and rebuilt, which of course takes time. And then the committee emphasized that there needs to be a clear linkages in terms of the project itself and the FET core colleges in the area for the skilling process. That's 8.5. Okay.
Honorable McLaughlin?
Sorry, Chair, my comment was going to be on 8.6.
Okay.
But as related to 723. Sorry, not 723, 721 on page 10.
Yeah.
Do you want me to wait or can I do it now?
You can do it.
Okay. So on page 10 under 721, it says the school was completed on the 15th of July 2013. But the plaque on the wall at the school says it was handed over on the 23rd of November 2013. So there seems to be a 6-month gap there between completing the job and actually bringing it into service, as it were. I just wondered why that was the case, but I just noticed that the dates didn't correlate. Then in the 8.6 itself, I would just like to point out there that I noticed that although the school was only a year old, already it was showing signs of wear and tear. Paint was starting to peel off the walls. There was quite a lot of maintenance that needed doing. And one of the things the school board there asked us for was, can't we give them more money to maintain the school and do this and do that? I know this is an underprivileged community, but I just felt, can't they themselves do anything to try and maintain their own school? They're given a beautiful facility, but they're sitting waiting for us to come back and say, well, here's some more money so you can paint the door, and here's some more money to do this, and here's some more money to do that. I think the local community needs to come on board. They don't appear to be that poverty struck if one looks around, with all due respect to them, because I don't live in their shoes, so I don't quite understand the situation. But if you look at the area, people have homes on reasonable sized pieces of land. They own cattle, they own sheep, they own horses. Their houses are very nicely looked after. And I just thought, this isn't a totally impecunious society or community that these children are coming from. I'm sure the parents could be brought on board somehow, and the parent-teachers kind of thing to just contribute to the school in some way. That was my concern. Thank you, sir.
Okay, Honorable Fick.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Regarding 8.4, I'm not so sure that is true. That is correct that 8.4, that there will be no additional costs when the contract is terminated. I mean, it depends on the contract. I mean, we haven't seen it, so the possibility is that, you know, it might be that you'd have to reimburse the contractor for additional costs, or so I cannot believe that is true. We just need to look at that. And then 8.6, I just want a slightly different view to Honorable McLaughlin. Well, not different, but I think what they were requesting is not the actual maintenance and running of the school. I think they shortfall was more equipment to cut the grass, because the cows are not coping with the long grass there, so they need equipment to cut the grass, and I mean that's where the challenge was, and surely it can't be ideal for those little children that need to run on the school grounds. Thank you.
Okay. Have another comment. Yeah, just two general observations that we made as well there. The first is that it did not seem to be intergovernmental integrated planning so far as the construction of schools is concerned. In some cases, for instance, we found the school is standing, but water supply is questionable, because they are dependent on harvesting rainwater. Yet there is water supply in the area, but it's not connecting to the school. That goes with electricity as well. So you don't get the sense that basic education, the water sector, electricity, integrated planning, which is part of the objective of a city. The second observation that we made broadly was that, and in terms of the reports, a city generally is behind schedule, because it was supposed to be completed in the 2014-15 financial year, but it's now going to the 2016-17 financial year. So you can see that the generally problems of delays, and that has implications
for the funding. The point that Honorable Fick is raising, that it is not a correct, it is not a convincing response from the department to say that there is not going to be financial implications. One, if they terminate the contract, and two, financial implications related to delays in the completion of the project on time, and then the very fact that the whole ACIDI project itself is now going beyond 2014-15 to 2016-17. And those are generally our observations and our concerns.
Honorable Nyalung.
I wanted to say, while we are complaining about the obesity in our country, most of the schools are not having the sports field. So I say thanks.
Okay, sports fields. You want to respond to this?
Oh, okay. This is not in the physical report. We just wanted to add this, but let me just read it for the record, finding 8.9.
Okay.
The committee notes was concerned that not all schools are provided with sports facilities. In addition, the committee notes that the provision of sanitation facilities for both genders in one housing and the uptake of quality hygiene standards overall should meet the applicable standards. And then the committee's view is that sports is an important component for quality education and sanitation facilities and hygiene should at all times meet the minimum requirements.
Your point is that most of them do have sports facilities, but not all. Your point is catch up, Honorable Nyalo.
Yeah.
Okay, but also I think Honorable Fick said either that even where they have, the grass is not cut, so they are not really user friendly.
Yeah.
Something that we need to deal with. Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. Could I just suggest that we add the word standard in where we say meet minimum requirements, meet standard minimum requirements, so that we can have one standard across the board for all the schools.
Okay. Those are observations on the schools. Can we look at recommendations? I guess the recommendation is overall for the report, yes, sir.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe before the committee moves on to the recommendation, was also another very serious concern that we picked up when the department gave us the some reports and some documents. There was a report where the department was outlining all the schools that are supposed to be built, right? The date when the tender was awarded, the budget allocation to the school, the performance progress to date. Now, what we picked up was that in a number of schools, there were some few schools that were still at zero performance. And when we looked at the award, the tender, when was awarded to the contractors, and it was in April last year. But today, they since have not performed. And when it was that it was interrogated that area, the issue was that some contractors have been terminated and they've taken the department to court. And therefore, court litigation then takes it on time and it then prolongs the whole process of appointing another contractor to actually carry out the work. So the court litigation really has impact, major impact. In making the ACIDI falling behind the schedule in some areas. For instance, in Kanduli, there were two schools that we had to also look at. And the issue of defining 8.9 also, I think it emanates from the guideline of the norms and standards that says the ideal school, these are the things that it should entail. Should have laboratories, sport facilities, should have, you know, all those kinds of things. So what then we picked up with regards to the finding was that some of the schools are not in compliance with the ideal school. We understand that the affiliated program was an intervention from the national department to try and actually eradicate the mass schools as a matter of agent. But the requirements by the norms and standards should not be compromised, because the ideal school is defined as school with facilities, laboratories, and so forth and so forth. Thank you very much.
Okay, Honorable Chair, please go.
Honorable Chair, I think we should also be interested in knowing the reason for the termination. Why I am saying that is that I was just thinking that if it is more than one termination, you might find that there is collusion. People decide that, no, we'll just terminate, and then this thing will go to court, it will take its time until the end of the financial year. Fortunately, before I came to Parliament, for 17 years I was doing audits, and you find schemes like that. So we need to really find out why this in this instance, why was this contract terminated?
Okay, recommendations.
Okay, I'll just read out the first recommendations are directed to the Minister of Basic Education. The first one speaks to the Department to submit a report to the NA which indicates the level of support provided by the CIDP and other relevant stakeholders, ensuring that contractors were sufficiently capacitated to carry out the school infrastructure project. For 9.12, the department should, as far as possible, ensure that artisans from technical and vocational education and training colleges in the areas where schools were being constructed also benefit from the state's significant investment in schools infrastructure. And then 9.13, the Department of Basic Education ensure that all schools constructed have credible operations and maintenance plans in place. They should also include the provision of teachers and support staff such as security personnel.
Recommendation for the on education after our observation. Perhaps we might also need to say something to the effect that the department must ensure that there are no delays in the implementation of projects, because they are managing this themselves. So if there are delays, like you are saying, because either than collusion, Honorable Shoppers told, it could be that also that people who are not capable get appointed. That's why they can't start the work. Because sometimes if you do a big project, you need to provide guarantees, sort of things. By the time they want those things, they find that they have appointed somebody who should not have been appointed. But because you have appointed the person, then they take you to court. And then so I think the issue of delays, although of course I've heard the minister talking about opening how many schools every month in the Eastern Cape, once every week. But our observation says despite that there are glaring problems that should be attended, including these delays. So in other words, they could do better. But also maybe we should add something about ensuring quality. I think Honorable McLaughlin was saying that that school is a year old, but it's, you can see paint is starting to peel. Because if you want to accelerate school infrastructure, it doesn't mean you should do
infrastructure that is not of quality. So it's not just maintenance, but ensuring that it's proper quality. Honorable Fit, you are raising no. Honorable Thomas, you are fine. Are we okay with the schools? Yes, Honorable.
Chairperson, I will just ask our respect to actually trace maybe 3 years back the findings of the Auditor General and the recommendations, because after findings we usually make recommendations, and if ever the recommendations were taken seriously by the ODG.
Okay. On the recommendation on the second one, you say it's to the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. Yes.
Okay, this one, it's just the one. We did have similar recommendations in the Division of Revenue, which were taken from the AG. Okay, but let me just read this one, just to compress that as you think about this one. To the Minister of COCTA, the Department of Corporate Governance, in partnership with the South African Local Government Association, implement interventions aimed at ensuring that all municipalities comply with frameworks in the DORA with specific reference to water infrastructure grants, and that compliance with routine requirements such as completing all information, time and submission of invoices is enforced.
Okay.
Completing all the required information,
yeah.
And the time and submission of invoices is enforced.
Thank you, Jay. Can I just assist with the wording in that last line? I would suggest we remove the word timely and put in the words for the timeliest.
What the timeliest?
For the timeliest submission of invoices is enforced.
Okay.
Thank you.
I want to suggest that we break the sentence into its own 9.2 from and that compliance with routine requirements and so on up to the end. Phrase it properly, but let it be a standalone, because it's the second issue that we want to raise quite sharply. Non-submission of invoices results.
So you want to say there must be 9.2
yeah.
And 9.22.
Yeah. Can I just check quickly that because of our oversight on water and sanitation, is there nothing we want to recommend to the Department of Water and Sanitation? And secondly, I thought in this report we could also capture the fact that these municipalities that we visited and others that we may not have visited that have been badly, that the committee should summon them to the National Assembly so that we can engage on those observations, so that we don't leave it loose. Yeah. But let me hear what the members have to say about it. Honorable McLeod.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I would very much like to see that you make a recommendation to Water and Sanitation. Just as a general comment on that score, if one looks at the bottom of pages 1 and 2 of our report, our delegation consisted of 12 people. The people we went to see, the stakeholders, totaled 56, 14 of whom were from the Department of Water and Sanitation. This is a department that on the one hand says they're spending so much money because they're paying lots of people, and on the other hand, they say they can't spend their money because they've got all these unfilled vacancies. If they can afford to send 14 people on a trip like this where there's absolutely no productivity on their part, they're wasting money hand over fist. Mm. I think it is criminal. that this happens. I have a serious concern about the number of people who came and spent time doing absolutely nothing to try and be with us while we were on oversight, because they contributed nothing. They were on for a free ride. Many of them stayed in the hotels, had transport, accommodation, etc., and there was absolutely no contribution from them. I think we need to make that point to the Department of Water and Sanitation, that the first thing they need to do is start looking at the way they deploy their staff, because it's not acceptable to my way of thinking. And secondly, I think we really need to enforce to them and recommend to them, they need to get out there and do site visits. They need to be on the ground looking at the money they're spending as a department so that they can monitor themselves the performance of their department. It doesn't help they just come along when we go there for oversight and it's the first time they see what's going on. They need to be there on a regular basis. The one fellow I spoke to, just by way of illustration, Chair, he lives in East London. He's got to go and check these sites on a weekly basis. So he drives from East London to each one of these things. Obviously, he's not doing a great job because he can spend 10 minutes at each site and move on again. So he just comes and ticks a box and off he goes again. It's not doing the job. I have a serious concern. Thank you, sir.
Okay, so the team will formulate some recommendation around water and sanitation, because the big part of the work there is them.
Yes.
And it will be strange that we don't think they should do something. We capture what Honorable Colin is saying, and when we come to adopt the report, we'll look at how you phrase the additional info. And also, I said those mayors that were running away when the committee was there, they must be called here so that they can come and explain these things. We may well, when we do that, want to invite the relevant portfolio committees here. It might be very helpful so that they can see what the problems they have, and they may be able to follow up as the part of the oversight work as well. Any other thing? Another short question.
I don't know if it is possible, Chairperson, that you know, these people be asked to actually go on site and examine on a more regular basis and send the reports to ourselves or their portfolio committee. But this report must always have a photo of so that we can see the progress. Because it is possible for us to have a report that is written in good English and yet there is no work happening at the spot.
So we didn't take pictures of these pipes. So we do. Was taking pictures. So the pictures are there. Probably with your own phone. Okay. But there's an official photographer. Because I think it's sometimes it's helpful when you do PowerPoint that you can show what we found there and when we engage with various stakeholders so that they can see the situation. Any other thing for today? What we want, the team must go and now finalize the report. Next week we'll then adopt the final draft, take into account all our comments, observations, recommendations, then we can have a proper report adopted next week. You are fine? Yes, sir.
Thanks. Without much ado, sir, I've got only two proposals in addition to the recommendations on water, sir. One being that we had made a finding on the MWIC grant around the lack of water in Bizan in Dabangud, and therefore the committee can propose that the grant should extend its lifespan. because it is a 3-year grant and it's a short medium term intervention. Now, Honorable Tuavaza also articulated very well that some of these areas are not going to be covered by the long term plan, that is a dam. And so they are still going to remain without water. So now, when you terminate this grant and yet there is no long term plan, in some of the different areas that will cover them, they will remain without water for ages. So that's why I'm saying so probably the extension of the lifespan of the grant will be more progressive. We can monitor moving forward if there is an impact and tighten it up, the oversight and all of that. That's one. Two, there was also a very contentious issue around the operation and maintenance budget. That municipalities do have that budget, but it's not being used for maintenance and operation. So what then happens is that municipalities, even departments, keep on building new structures and they don't budget for maintenance. That budget municipalities is there, but it gets diverted to other things. That issue arose when we were dealing with the Owatambo on the project where they said they will be taking all the staff that they were using to install that project, which were community members, they will be absorbing them to their maintenance section. And we said, what are the cost implications and all of that? But it came clear that the operation and maintenance budget is a problem. So maybe our proposal should be to say there should be a ring fencing of that particular allocation, so that we know that the maintenance and operations are not compromised in any way. And Chair, I wanted to respond also to some of the issues that were raised by honourable members. For instance, the honourable Chope raised the issue on termination of contractors at Y. Most of the contractors on the shop, we found out that they had a cash flow problems. And when you ask, but why did you give them a contract? And the issue was that they had scored more on a BEE scorecard. So the BEE scorecard does not look at your cash flow, does not look at your capacity to provide other aspects. So if you score more on that, then you get the contract. But when you have to implement the contract, the reality kicks in that you have got no funds. That's why in other project, they will get an advance payment, which is quite problematic as well, because it's not in compliance with the division of revenue conditions. So that was the main issue, cash flow problems and capacity to implement some projects. Obviously, of course, also the main issue was also the project management on the ground, that project managers found themselves having to benefit some contractors when they're implementing, because they can't submit any form of documentation that is required when after they've been appointed. So those are kind of the real challenges that we picked up on the ground. And also the issue around the social rest that Honorable Tuavaza was speaking about, we had the Department of Basic Education volunteering to say it will investigate the matter, because there was a contradiction between the contractor to say there's a social unrest, people are coming to stop him in his work on site, and the people were saying, the Department of People were saying, no, that matter was resolved. So DPE promised that they will investigate that matter and report to the committee. So we can just note that as therefore to follow it up so we can get the report. Yeah, the maintenance chair also, again, the issue around the maintenance, again, chair, on the schools, we can attribute that to the poor workmanship, to the poor material that is used by contractors, which does not last. Once it rains, the paint is washed away and all of that. So there is that kind of a challenge on the ground. That people, when they're building this project, they use poor, cheap material that does not last. Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll capture that in the report, the issues of maintenance to be budgeted for. I think we've also said that in the appropriation last year, also division of revenue, and issues of quality must come in, appointment of proper contractors so that we don't appoint and cancel. Some of these things we've raised with COPTA, we've raised them with the relevant departments. But I think let me end by thanking the members of the committee who undertook the oversight visit. I'm sure it is eye-opening to go on the ground and see for ourselves, but we need to act on what we see. I think
people were to see it and just write reports and that, it will not add value to what we're trying to do. I think the test is going to be our ability to enforce and make the situation change on the ground, ensure that people have a better life. But thank you very much, honorable members. I know traveling in the Eastern Cape is not easy. Yeah, I've done that when I was Minister of Arts and Culture. I've been to Bizana, by the way. I've been to Mampondwe, Mosa Hill, those areas. They are vast areas. And it's good that we chose to go there. We didn't choose to do easy stuff. And of course, the support team that was there, you write as you go. I'm sure she went at night with this drafting. I know Zandi couldn't make it because she was sick. But thank you very much. We will get the final report next week when we teach. Thank you very much. Meeting is adjourned.